You're listening to Bands and Botanicals, a unique podcast where trainer and trainee discuss fitness, herbalism, and healthy habits for life. We're your hosts. I'm Paula Kirsch, owner of Botanically Curious and artisan herbalist.
And my name is Danielle Kreese, certified personal trainer and owner of DC Fit. Now, before we get started, if you could do us a brief favor and go to Apple Podcasts and just leave us a review, we'd love to hear from you. And with that being said, let's start the show. Hello, everyone.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome back to another episode. Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah. What day is it? Is it Tuesday? Monday?
Monday. Monday.
Yep. Yeah. It feels like the weekend was prepped for the week, so not the best weekend, but it was a weekend. Yeah.
I guess it got you ready, though. Mm-hmm. Set you up. That's what we always talk about. Setting yourself up, right, so that things don't feel as stressful or as overwhelming sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got to take that time. We have a really exciting guest here today. So another person that we're bringing in from Southern Oregon, so a local here from Medford. He is one of my friends and also a coworker that I had at F45. He's currently an F45 coach. His name is Peter Wolf, and he does Rogue Wolf training as well as that coaching at F45 I just mentioned. And he, to me, and I'm sorry if this makes you feel weird, I've told you this so many times, is just the greatest wealth of knowledge and information, and is such a, to me, an inspiring trainer and someone that I kind of aspire to be like as a trainer as I grow into my work as well. So I'm really, really happy to have him on here. He has certifications in kettlebell work and body weight and martial arts. He's a personal trainer. I've personally taken a yoga class with him simply because someone else suggested him because of his wealth of knowledge and body awareness. He teaches his own classes. So he has kettlebell strength and flexibility classes, Indian club strength and flexibility. He teaches Tai Chi. He teaches martial arts movements. So nothing that you don't do, essentially. He's a very busy man. So welcome, Peter.
Well, thank you so much. Yep. Luckily, we're not on video, so you can't see me blushing. Appreciate it. But yeah, I've been doing this professionally since 2003. And then in college as a martial arts coach, was pretty obsessed with training for myself and for other students. So always trying to be an internal student. And a lot of times the best way to facilitate being a student was getting, you know, paid to teach also at the same time. So that's still the case, you know, trying to learn by doing. And kettlebells has been a big part of that, especially the last probably 12 years.
Yeah. So if you were already coaching people in university, has fitness always been a part of your life then? Have you been doing this and martial arts particularly since you were younger?
Yeah. I started doing martial arts around age 9. And my dad's a physical therapist, or was until he retired. And so it was kind of in the family. In high school, I worked at the physical therapy as just an assistant, you know, changing things out, sometimes showing people exercises. So I was kind of in the gym. Mm-hmm. It was my dad's habit too, to like bring us to the YMCA at 5:30 in the AM, me and my younger brother, to work out. So it was, a little bit grew up with it for sure.
So teaching those 5 a.m. classes at F45 then is pretty standard
yes,
for you.
Yes, not completely new territory. Not about all. And with the martial arts, part of it was a senior project, high school kind of thing. So my choice was to instruct martial arts. And so I had a little group of other high school students and friends and younger students of my brother's age. And so for that year, I taught them and kind of documented and then looked a little bit into what that meant being a coach or a martial arts instructor back then too. That was 1996.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there seems to be like a theme with a lot of what you do now, which is balancing strength and flexibility. So was that like an intentional thing, or is there, you know, can you tell us why that's an important focus for you?
Absolutely. Yeah. So when I was doing martial arts at 9 and 10 years old, there was still a stereotype that you didn't train with weights. It would make you slow. Mm. It wouldn't be like a full body kind of connection. And so it was a waste of time, or worse, it was like actually detrimental. Same time, you have like Bruce Lee and Jean-Claude Van Damme. Like you have also this image of a very strong, muscular, like martial artist. And so trying to make that work in my head, like how does that happen? And so what I think it turns out is just better, smarter ways to train weights, not traditional sit down machines. but finding ways to be, to continue to train. Like martial artists do tend to hurt themselves. If you're not hurting someone else, you're probably hurting yourself with training too. So multiple injuries also balanced out that need for flexibility and strength. Or what I like, I focus more now is like anti-fragility, like, you know, being strong enough that the things you do continue to make you stronger and you don't break down from them.
Oh, I love that. I mean, I'm sure you experiences as a personal trainer and as a coach as well. I mean, almost everyone that you interact with, including coaches, and I will include myself in this, feel like they have an injury or a strain somewhere that they're trying to work through. And there's trying to find the balance between overtraining, especially if it's something that you love and enjoy doing, actually, and it doesn't feel like a punishment or something like that, then I feel like it's such a beautiful thing that you're trying to bring those two focuses together. Because I think finding the time to focus on flexibility and mobility almost becomes just as much discipline as when you're first trying to find the time to get in a regular strength workout. I mean, I'm struggling and trying to find that space myself as my own personal journey right now. And so I think it's beautiful relationship.
Enter the kettlebell, because that is that was a big deal for me getting obsessed with it, is how much time it saved efficiency wise. Especially if your goals are not really super crystal clear pinpoint, like I need to focus on just this one aspect of fitness, the kettlebell will cover potentially more, you'll check more different boxes than any other tool I've used. So there's good ways to combine your flexibility and strength. And then it just depends a little bit on the dosage, like how much kettlebell you take, whether it's a strength workout or a cardio workout or a flexibility workout might depend on just like the dosage, not necessarily the movement itself. The movement might cover all those bases. For example, a Turkish get up, you know, you don't have to do that even with the kettlebell. There's some nice benefits with the kettlebell. But that's definitely a hallmark of a lot of kettlebell systems. They'll use that Turkish get up in there.
I was just going to say, I really love that, because the other reason we have you on the show today is because we want to advertise for those locals out there that listen to the podcast that we are doing an event here July 11th. And
guest coach Peter Wolf.
Excited and about that.
It's going to be really awesome. I love it because it's going to be such a good balance between building and recovery. And so I'm really excited for those locally that can join us.
Yes. And I couldn't agree more about kettlebells. I mean, I feel like they're this huge gift in this little compact package because they do. I mean, the way that the weight is distributed from the handle and the way that the center of gravity works when you're working with a kettlebell, I mean, being able to hit balancing and stabilizing muscles, but also larger muscles, but also really focus on the posterior chain, which really benefits, you know, posture and stuff like that. And you could get the cardio in, but not the impact that running may have if you're trying to do that type of cardio. And kettlebells just seem to be such an amazing tool. And I, you know, do you think that, or why do you think it's so important, besides all the reasons I just mentioned, that people familiarize themselves with kettlebells and also take the time to really learn the form and the proper technique with a kettlebell specifically, opposed to like a dumbbell or a barbell?
Yeah, the kettlebell is awkward, right? That's part of its benefit, but also why it's harder maybe sometimes to get started. There's a physical therapist, performance trainer, Greg Cook, talks about self-limiting tools. Like without some skill, there's only so much you can do with a kettlebell because of its awkwardness. So you're gonna have to learn a little bit the skill set to really do all the things with it. So in that way, you can't get into too much trouble too soon. It's difficult, like in that Turkish get-up example, it's kind of self-limiting in the sense that if the weight's too heavy, you can't really fake it and force it. You're just going to be stuck on the floor.
You'll be like, and you're
So in that way, even though it may appear awkward and dangerous, it's kind of safer in that way because you'll never, you know, get yourself into a real dangerous position. I like to divide the things you can do, because there are so many things you can do with the kettlebell, into kind of a yin and yang world. Of ballistics and grinding movements. So the ballistic movements are like
Can you explain ballistics to everyone real quick? Yeah,
sure. We can put that kind of in the same family as plyometric exercises, where mm-hmm. there is a loading, a contraction, and like a release, like a catapult. And so in the kettlebell world, this is your kettlebell swing, the snatch, and cleaning the kettlebell in various ways would all be ballistic lifts, whether it's one bell, two bells, one hand, or two hand, which is, you know, pretty good amount of options right there. And then on the other side of the coin, you've got grinds, where you're not going to use as much your connecting tissue and the elastic quality. You're not going to use necessarily as much the fast twitch muscles mm-hmm. In a grinding motion. And so that could be a movement that looks a whole lot like a yoga posture. Mm-hmm. We've got the windmill is an old time lift. This is part of the obsession for me with kettlebells, is because they have really been around so long. There's really a lot of educational, there's books written, videos, there's a lot of stuff. It's just kind of international. It's not necessarily super popular in the US, and it's not necessarily popular in the last 50 or 60 years, although it has been, I think, in the last 10 or 15. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's kind of that trend that doesn't really go away. It just mm-hmm. come and go a little bit. But the grinding movements can look a lot like yoga. They can be restorative, the grinding movements. You can use them more to like isometrically load joints. So like a loaded carry would be a grind. Just pick up a heavy kettlebell and start walking. Mm-hmm. And it will, again, like be self-limiting. It'll kind of force the issue. It'll put you into good posture to hold that thing. Otherwise, it's just not going to feel good to hold it right. anymore. And again, one bell or two bells. Now, we can also get into real complex movement like a Turkish get-up, or movements like the bent press is mm-hmm. another grind or old-timey lift that if you saw someone perform it really well, it would look a lot like a cirque movement, right? Like a hand balancing movement from a cirque performer. It can be kind of elegant, use a lot of flexibility in the hips and spine. It used to be one of the lifts like 100 years ago where like you got to learn the bent press because you'll learn your body so well by way of this lift that you'll just be good at all the lifts. And I think there's a little sense in that, like if you get really good at the kettlebell swing, now back on the ballistic side of things, mm-hmm. I think it carries over into be good, helps qualities like box jumps, broad jump. It will mm-hmm. help Olympic lifting as like an adjunctive movement. To teach someone to really powerfully use their hips is a big deal. We're sitting too much. We know that. We're on computers too much. We know that. So to powerfully extend your hips, you just don't get to do that enough during the day. So I like that there is a way to check both those boxes with one single tool. There'd be other ways to do ballistic movements and grinds. Mm-hmm. But this tool gets you a lot of options. And I really think, too, it can really be used for just about any demographic and age group. You know, depending, you can move this up and down to make it fit almost anybody. But you got to be a little creative and know your options.
So for someone starting out on their fitness journey, then that might be more intimidated with kettlebells. What kind of like recommendations or advice would you have for them?
Yeah, I think one of the best resources out there is strongfirst.com. So Strong First is the organization I'm certified from. I'm an elite trainer with Strong First, which means I hold all four of their certifications. So that's one of the best ones. There are a few more out there for sure now. And there is the Russian Kettlebell Certification, or RKC, and they have some good resources. There is CrossFit Kettlebell Specialization is pretty good as well. I hold that certification. It's a little more sport specific. We could talk about that too. There's Kettlebell Sport, which I think is excellent mix of strength and endurance. It's a 10-minute, usually grinding mm-hmm. event with one or two bells. Not super exciting to watch. but it is a different side of the kettlebell world than I focus on. It's kind of competitive and trying to get mm-hmm. the most amount of reps over a certain period of time. I think my approach is a little more holistic in that way, not as much about competition or sport, but I think that's a cool side of kettlebells as well.
Yeah. Do those resources, are those good for everyone or mm-hmm. just, I wasn't sure if those were just good for like trainers or if they were good for people.
No, they're good for everybody. Yeah, Strong First has some beginner programs, some free information. I would recommend to people to join the forum and you'll get your questions answered about stuff. Some of the companies that sell kettlebells also have some good resources for getting you started with safe programs. So Kettlebell Kings is a good one for that. They have called Living Fit is their program, but they involve the kettlebell. On It is another company. And they have like a Phase 6 is another like an
Asha. Oh, yeah.
You know them. Yeah, they use some
good
stuff.
I'm familiar with them. Yeah, they're on Instagram.
Yes.
Stephanie Rose.
Sure. Yeah, great stuff.
Oh, yeah,
so
amazing.
They do a good job of crossing over. This is, again, part of the allure is into that martial arts kind of world. And for sure, to the Strength and Recovery Balancing Act, like that's a big part of martial artists. A part of the martial arts world is like you stick around long enough, you're going to have to figure out the recovery and healing process. Because again, you've either hurt yourself or you've hurt your students or they've hurt each other along the way. And so you get pretty intimate with recovery, at least if you want to last a long time in that game. One of the draws for me to kettlebells was some of the martial arts instructors I respected were using them. So one of my mentors is John Ingham. He's a Strong First instructor as well. He was also, he's one of the highest ranked Taekwondo black belts that you can get. And he's, you know, very strong, active, late into his 50s. Mark Chang is another. He has a program called Tai Chang, with Beachbody's Tai Chi program. And he also has a system called K3 Combat. I'm certified under his method. And one of the three Ks in K3 is kettlebell. They use the kettlebell to kind of bridge the gap in strength training and martial arts, softer and harder style martial arts. You'll sometimes hear the kind of kettlebell system I'm talking about as hard style. In the sense that things can be kind of rigid, which makes them safe. This is what is the difference a little bit between sport. A sport style swing looks a little more coily, a little looser. A professional kettlebell athlete, in order to last for 10 minutes doing the same motion, it's a little bit like a difference between a sprinter and a long distance runner. Like you start to change the way you move to facilitate the endurance aspect. And so some people will call what I teach hard style because it's you try to really use a lot of abdominal strength to protect yourself to make it safer.
Yes. Oh God, which we everyone needs.
So I don't mind someone's criticizing it saying like, well, it's simple. Yes, it is. Like this style of kettlebell is kind of simple. There's some fun systems out there. So like the On It system is a little less simple. And they're like the WEC method is another one that they use kettlebells and rotational movement training or RMT, all good stuff. I think, you know, there's a little more rub your belly, tap your head kind of coordination stuff that you'd want to put in some time. I would love to see a student just really be able to swing well and then do some of those grinding movements, even just like a weighted carry really well and just really own the kettlebell, the weight that they're using. And then, yeah, especially if you're outside, you can juggle the kettlebell, be in a spot where it's safe to drop it.
Yeah. I mean, with we've talked about this on our shows previously, like especially with Instagram and with so much that's out there. And I've fallen victim to this too, of trying something beyond my means, but I know exact, like the moment I know, and I will work on things to build up to getting to that point. Yeah. But so many people now just think that everything has to be very complex and complex movements and extremely dynamic. And, you know, we forget that we need to take the steps in order to get to those dynamic movements, and that the reason kettlebells have been around for so long, I mean, for so long, there have been versions of kettlebells throughout all of, I think, strength history. But it has been just those base movements that keep everyone going and that have lasted the test of time versus like the most dynamic of the movements, which are beautiful. I mean, it's almost like watching like a dance when you watch someone flow with a kettlebell. It's incredible, but you can't just pick up a kettlebell and start doing that. Like you have to get those foundational aspects down. So to me, simple is it's just building. It's just the building blocks. If you do want to continue to work. And one of the things I love about kettlebells versus a dumbbell or even a barbell is the distribution of weight and kind of how it challenges you in that way. And the versatility, whether you're doing, you know, kind of a swing type of move, or even if you're doing a standard quote unquote strength move, like a bicep curl, where you just hold the handle versus holding the base.
Yep.
Paula and I have done that before in classes, and it seems to add this whole other element with your smaller stabilizing muscles. And what are some of that? Those are some of my favorite things about a kettlebell. And I know you've talked a little bit about them, but like, are there other things, like they're great for core? Like, what are things, what are your selling points for a kettlebell to people, essentially, that would get them intrigued, because we're all really comfortable with dumbbells and with barbells and that intimidation we spoke of. So what is your kind of being like, there's this, bam, bam, bam.
Yep. So one of the bigger ones, and I would just speak to a couple different demographics. If you're an ex-athlete, an older athlete, you're feeling like you can't express as much like power as you used to, right? Or your joints don't support that. The kettlebell ballistics give you a chance to use that kind of, I want to use the word violent, but just very explosive energy, like in a safe way. You're not really leaving the earth, but you're using all the musculature as if you were going to jump. It's like gymnastics, like that power element. That I would say you're also strengthening your ligaments and connecting tissue when you do these kind of movements that you don't necessarily get in a more like closed chain movement or seated movement. So in that way, it's going to make you a little more injury proof, kind of back to that anti-fragile, like you're improving your joints and tendons. Even in a grinding movement, like that bicep curl you're talking about, the offset is going to challenge your joint stability quite a bit more. You'll improve your grip strength. And I think it's good for the whole, like the fascial net, which I think gets underlooked. Unless you're doing movements that are challenging your stability quite a lot, or something like ballistic, explosive, you're probably not really stressing that connecting tissue as much. And it's just like anything, it's about dosage, how much, but you stress it, it comes back stronger, is what we want to happen. A lot of the aha moments that happened to me with the kettlebell were I was teaching yoga for, at that point, probably 5 years. And we got this garland pose, Malasana. And it's basically like a yogi style squat. And even after years, some students just were not improving. Like I could tell they were trying, they were coming to class 2 and 3 times a week. And it was like, even as a coach, it was kind of frustrating, like, huh, it's just not really improving. So then you put a kettlebell in somebody's hands to do a goblet squat, or what we call in Strong First a prying goblet squat. So it's a mobility exercise to get improve your squat. And I saw people's squats improved in 5 minutes where they hadn't improved in actual years. So it was, it can be a powerful tool that way, and it gives the, it is experiential. It's not me telling them to do something. It's like the kettlebell's forcing the issue, or maybe another way to say it's allowing it to happen. The redistribution of weight is allowing it to feel safe to go to some place that you can't normally go to. So for like the goblet squat is one of those. There's another stretch we would do in the seminar, or when I took over class, would be the armbar stretch. And it like really opens up the T-spine, the shoulder girdle, feels great. Looks a little intimidating at first, but it's another one where I can tell you what it is, I can tell you what it's kind of like, but it's really doing it and feeling it and getting the kettlebell to kind of talk back to you that I think is powerful. Other lessons, like, again, like coming back to yoga or even Tai Chi and other martial arts. In Japanese, they call it breathing the hara, like breathing your core. In Tai Chi or Chinese martial arts, it's the Dantian or central heaven, but it kind of comes back to using your pelvic floor, basically, right? Pilates, it's the powerhouse. And so that was another one. I taught Pilates mat for years and years, and you try to get people to really use the pelvic floor. Well, kettlebell swings, like, you have to. Like, you'll hurt your back. You'll hurt your back on the second time you swing it if you don't use your pelvic floor. So it kind of forces the issue. It's not you deciding and trying us to decide what it kind of feels like to see if you got it, which I think sometimes can happen in a mind-body class. Like, I'm feeling the energy. It's like, no, you'll feel it. And it'll be real tangible. And in that way, facilitates faster learning sometimes, or faster body connection, is what I found with it. So I really like to teach, you know, put all the cards on the table in a class, like what we're going to do, like the goblet squat, prying goblet squat, arm bar stretch, you got upper and lower body mobility. And then we would do ballistic, like the swing, and kind of see what people are comfortable with, building out of that. And then probably a variation on the Turkish getup, if not the whole Turkish getup. So we'd have mobility, recovery, strength, some of that power kind of all in one, and really pretty easy to do in less than an hour. I got kind of addicted to using my kettlebell when we had our first child. When Oliver was born, I was just going to stay away from the gym for like 2 weeks entirely and just be home. So I just had one single 35-pound kettlebell, and I could swing every day and still feel pretty good. It like didn't beat me up so much. I could change the workout a little bit. So I fell in love with this program called Simple and Sinister, which is a good book you can get by Pavel Tatsarin. He's kind of one of the OGs of the kettlebell movement. And Simple and Sinister is just swings and get-ups. That's a whole program. And that's kind of all I did. But then you just move up in weight, move up in weight, move up in weight. So the simple goal was 32 kilograms or 70-odd pounds for men. And I got to that eventually. Then there's a sinister goal. And I've shot at that goal a couple times over the years and not quite got it. That's the same swings and get-ups, but with 48 kilos or about 106 pounds.
Whew. Wow, doing a Turkish get-up with that would be insane.
That'd be like carrying a small human.
Oh my goodness. Yep. On one hand.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, people will be pleasantly surprised with how strong you can get with that movement if you're patient with it and just keep doing it. The problem is not even the weight, it's the timing of it for the sinister test. So you have to do 10 of those get-ups within 10 minutes. And right before that, you've got to do 100 single-arm swings. And for me, that's the limit right now is single-arm swings are very grip-intensive, let alone cardiovascular. And so after the swings, to try to do the get-ups is it's sinister. Like it's but at a lighter weight, it can feel real restorative. It's still a workout I go back to at sub-maximal weights when I don't have time to do much else because I can do it in 15 minutes. I can feel pretty good. I feel like I did powerful standing leg work, and I feel like I did some slow, almost meditative core work. The Turkish get-up can feel like that, like you're doing a martial arts form. It can be a little bit restorative.
Yeah, that's another great thing about kettlebells. I mean, you just hit on even things without even specifying on them. One, you don't need a bunch of different pieces in order to get the workout done. You could either have one, you could have two. They take up very little room, and then also the timing that it saves because it is so total body, because you can kind of get the cardio, get the balance, get the stabilizers, kind of get the strengthening all in that package. You don't have to spend an entire, I mean, you can, because if you want and you have the time and it feels fantastic, go for it. But like, you don't have to, it could be a very, like you said in the beginning, efficient way to move if you have those constraints. Okay, so I know that we've talked a little bit about kind of kettlebells in general, the benefits of all of them, but watching you and kind of the things that you post on Instagram and your practice with kettlebells and with Indian clubs and with the gada, which before I go on, what is a gada? Explain
so the gada is would have been a strength training tool used in northern India and like Pakistan. In wrestling culture, in Kushti wrestling culture, they would swing it. It's a type of a mace. And it would be like stone or clay at the end of a long wooden stick. And so you would swing it behind your back. And it's great for posterior chain, shoulder health, upper back. You can also do it in kind of a meditative way because it's predictable, almost like a metronome, right? So when you're swinging it, you do get into this kind of relaxed state. In order to swing it efficiently, you can't stay completely tight through your body. You know, it'll whip you around, especially if you get a heavy enough mace. And so there's a balance between kind of working with it and feeling stable, relaxing, and being confident while you're swinging something heavy behind your head. In India, sometimes they'll put like spikes on them or something to just up the ante
a little bit.
But yeah, the gada is a fun tool. The heavier ones are more limited, you know, what you can do with them. So what's popular now is a lighter mace, and like people doing mace flow or steel mace flow has taken it in a real different direction. But the origins are a little more, in my understanding, from that wrestling culture and using it almost as like a therapeutic restorative. You know, traditionally wrestlers train by wrestling with each other, and almost for sure you're going to get hurt while that's happening. And so they have a lot of these movements with the gada or with different styles of clubs. And so the Indian clubs are another thing I like to use a lot. There's different styles based on the size and weight and shape. So there's like meals and pavo handles and different names for these different kinds of Indian clubs. Mm-hmm. But they're kind of under a general category. Their era would have been similar to when the kettlebell was popular. A couple hundred years ago, it would have been like probably the, you know, more trendy than a Peloton. Multiple books written about Indian clubs pre-1900 and around the turn of the century.
Cool.
It was in the curriculum for, you know, physical education in Canada up through high school age. Wow. Until about 1950, 1949, I think.
Damn, Jeff could have been an Indian club master.
Sure. there is Dr. Now I'm forgetting his name. Thomas, but the U.S. military used Indian clubs a little bit too as a training tool. Mm-hmm. It's related to rhythm gymnastics. Like the expression of how you see rhythm gymnastics now, Indian clubs was a competitive event in one of the early Olympics, or maybe a couple of the early Olympics. They would use like a 3-pound club. So I find it to be a really useful tool for training movement, like the kettlebell, the mace, the Indian club, because they're swinging, like so that kind of rhythmic, you have to cooperate with the tool. You don't get to just control it like a dumbbell.
Mm-hmm.
You have to kind of play with gravity. You have to obey some of the rules. And there's a feedback that goes with that that I feel like stimulates your vestibular system a little bit, that push and pull and swinging. Mm-hmm. That I think we kind of need, you know, we're not swinging around in the trees anymore. So
mm-hmm.
I'm also real interested in some of the benefit I feel I get from this type of training is to get into a flow state. So
flow state.
We were talking about books a little bit during the breaks. And one of mm-hmm. the ones I've been liking lately are books like Flow, Becoming Superman, Stealing Fire. These are all books on like, what is that flow state? How do we get more of it? And why might we want to? And I think it does help if you're doing something that's stimulating, because you're getting some adrenaline and neurotransmitters going. Well, mm-hmm. exercise will do that.
Right.
You get a little bit of exertion. Then if you have a mindfulness quality, like then you're bringing it to another level. If you're having to fight for stability, so this would be something, you know, I think climbing, you know, does this, probably like parasailing, jumping out of a plane does this thing, but in a smaller way, Tai Chi does this, or Indian clubs does this. Like it does pull you off balance a little bit. And the suggestion is when this is happening that your brain is like, well, I can't worry about emotions and being sad right now. I need to go back to a deeper, like just get stable, like literally stable. And I think that carries over into emotional stability and lots of other things, is like just actually be physically stable in your home.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like that's, I think, something you really want from a practice like Tai Chi or yoga. I think sometimes a kettlebell just like delivers that, the goods, a little faster.
Yeah.
And then you can still go back to those practices. But I find like for me, I used to be more attracted to a more vigorous kind of militant yoga style, like Ashtanga, you know, do it every day, do a bunch of the salutations. Do the more extreme postures, and that wasn't serving me that well. I felt like I was getting kind of overuse injuries. Like a 90 mm-hmm. minute Ashtanga practice feels great, or a 90 minute Bikram yoga practice, but honestly I can get a lot of the same boxes checked for mind and for body in like 20 minutes with my kettlebell.
Yeah,
it can be a good trade.
It seems like a lot of what you do, you know, like if we're just talking about, since most people are familiar, most people do have access to kettlebells versus mm-hmm. Indian clubs.
Yeah.
The kettlebells, you know, with even, you know, the type of ballistics training that you were talking about, and also just the way that you swing and flow with it. I mean, you could take it around, you could take it up and down, you mm-hmm. could take it side to side. So the awareness that comes with having to control, having to have some control while also being in motion, or learning how to decelerate, you know, that explosive movement, like that swing, but learning how to bring it back down without pulling from your back or whatever it is. I mean, it creates this space for you to have to be very mindful and very aware. And that's what I love about exercise in general. But I could see and I could feel, you know, from when I use it, how you do have to tap in to something a little bit deeper and a little bit different, because you are throwing weight. You're not just doing linear, you know, movements, or in the sagittal plane, you know, with kettlebells, you move in all planes of motion, you use different ranges of motion, you could work with your mobility. So it creates that mindfulness. And it seems like for you, fitness has a very close connection to almost a meditative state, like you were talking about. And it's, you know, I think more and more it's being talked about and being accepted and also being wanted and like sought after by people to create more of that balance. Cause I think historically, at least as far as I know, you know, with bodybuilders and, you know, them starting off as personal trainers and everything, it's been more about just, you know, building really big muscles versus lean muscle, or, you know, like, how can I just get heavier and heavier and heavier, or, you know, working out for just the aesthetic versus everything else. And for you, it just seems like you've made a conscious decision to like bridge those two things in every way that you move.
Yeah. Appreciate that. Yeah. Again, like that 12-year-old martial artist, Peter, would have been like, oh no, what's the point of the gym? Like, why is my dad making me go to the Y
at 5:30?
I didn't think that there was a good reason to be, one, just like even indoors to exercise, you know? I think I've come even full circle back to that in some ways. I think you found that as well. Like, yeah. Hey, we can actually do this outside. And also acknowledging that there's tons of benefits to group exercise and community. And I think exercise into music, all these things are really powerful fitness tools, health tools. But at the same time, I'd like to be able to, we call it in kettlebell world, like your courage corner, like 6 by 5 feet, 1 or 2 kettlebells. You really don't need a fancy gym space or another person. The kettlebell almost becomes the coach because it's a reactive tool. It will tell you if you did it wrong. Almost for sure, it'll tell you if you did it wrong, which is not always true with other exercises, you know. And it won't take 100 reps either to know that you did it wrong. So it's a self-correcting tool in that way, or self-limiting, like we said. But you do have to be pretty mindful. It almost forces the issue that way.
I love that.
So one of the things we always ask our guests is, you know, what are your pillars to health, or what are some of the things that you really think are important to focus on for you?
Yeah, the first important thing that I would want to talk about with any kind of student is like, is this sustainable? Like what's the drive here? Because if it's not sustainable, then that's a different conversation. That's probably not really about health, right? That's maybe more like vanity or a competition goal or short-term something, which can be fun also and motivating. But that's kind of the first thing that I want to check off, is like that I can do this for a very long time. And so with kettlebells, I feel that's the truth. With Tai Chi, a lot of the martial arts I go to, I feel that's the truth. It's not easy to be able to continue to do it later in life, but it's certainly possible. So that's a driver. It needs to, I think, help me throughout the day. Like, I don't want to be so exhausted from my health practice that I can't actually interact with the world. Like, I don't want to go and just take some pills and sleep it off, you know, after a super hard workout. When I was living and training in China, we would have workout sessions that might go 4.5 hours. And then it's just about all you can do to eat and sleep and get ready for the next workout. You know, that was again like 20 something years ago. So it was not a sustainable way.
You know?
And I had to kind of figure that out by injuring myself. That like this was 6 days a week of this wasn't gonna work. So sustainable is a big deal, and that I have, it invigorates me. So almost that I'm not like working out my energy, but kind of recharging myself to do more.
I like that.
This idea that you could do the workout, go take a shower, and then still be ready to, you know, fend off your castle. You still have some energy to interact and do stuff or be useful. So that's some of the main ones. I'd like to be able to, and when I teach my students, like, I'm not sure what the verbiage for this is, but like, that it's something that can be passed on. Like, I don't want it to feel like, because this was my experience in learning martial arts, a lot of time is like, there's secrets, and you're not going to know the secrets until you're ready to a certain level. or go to a certain place. And like, I really think like if I teach you a good technique, like you should understand it and own it enough to teach it to somebody else. I don't know if it's Einstein or whatever the quote, like if you can't explain it to a third grader, like you probably don't really understand it as well as you think. And I think that's true. Like I do like to get into the real detailed stuff, and you know, we can go on in for hours about some of the detailed stuff, but the really valuable stuff is pretty basic. And so that's what I would look for. That's a pillar for me, is that it's simple, but not easy. Because if it's not simple, then I feel like there's something off about it. Another pillar for me is that it's not sport. I feel like almost always when you introduce sport, like when winning becomes the goal, then it's not necessarily healthy anymore. It could be, I mean, you can game things, you can make them fun, but you know, a lot of trainers, I think, get into it because of sport and like either their own sports history or they want to train athletes and work with like the highest level. But a lot of those athletes are pretty beat up. They're not always like real happy, healthy individuals, because sport almost always mutates things just a little bit to win. And it's just not quite balanced in lifestyle, or literally not balanced between right and left sides. And so for me, like I am definitely interested in helping people who are motivated by sports, but that's not one of my pillars. Like non-competitive is almost a pillar, which, you know, we push competitiveness a lot in fitness, but I don't think that's a pillar like I hang my hat on. It would be almost the opposite.
Yeah. I mean, I thought when I first became a trainer that I just wanted to train like people who just wanted to go like so hard and blah, blah. And honestly, some of my
0.001%.
Fulfilling clients have been like my silver sneaker clients. Honestly, like my older clients, and to watch them get that little bit of strength or mobility back or whatever. And honestly, they're such a joy. I mean, it actually makes you know that the workout is also helping them mentally, being stimulated and everything. And it's been some of like the greatest joys I've had teaching have been like, maybe they were once athletes, but they're like very far past that. And it's been amazing. So yeah, I think those are really great pillars. And for people who are listening, Peter, do you have anything other than this event, which is July 11th? July 11th, sorry.
And all equipment is provided. So you just show up. Yes. And, you know, some people have asked a little bit about that. We're not going to make you bring your own kettlebell.
Yeah, you have to carry them from your house, actually. That's part of the workout. And you better hold your posture correctly, or else Peter's going to put you through it. No, but besides July 11th, which we have our event, do you have anything else going on personally that people can look out for?
You know, just rebuilding the schedule right now. But if you check out Rogue Wolf Training on Instagram, or Rogue Wolf Training on the webpage is roguewolftraining.com. I'd announce any upcoming events. I'll be doing some local stuff through CrossFit Steelhead, probably in late July, and then hoping to build out. One of the things I'm most excited about sharing these last couple of years, especially right before our COVID era, was the K3 system, which is a mixture of Filipino martial arts, Chinese martial arts, and then using the kettlebell as a strength tool in the middle. And that's been one of the most just fun systems, watching new students get that without all the formalities that you sometimes have to go through to get the benefits in martial arts. And it can be so, I guess, like clicky, right? Like if we're doing Taekwondo, we're not doing mixed martial arts. And if we're doing mixed martial arts, then we're not doing Tai Chi. So what the K3 system does pretty slick is just kind of non-denominational. Let's figure out how we get the best benefits from all these different systems. And so that's been a lot of fun to teach. And I'm definitely going to be planning to do some seminars for that this year.
Let me know.
Yeah.
Let me know. Well, I'll keep an eye out for those, and I'm sure everyone else will too. And we appreciate you over here so much. And for me, I know personally, you're always, like I said, inspiring and teaching me new things. So it's really great to have you on the podcast, and we look forward to the event.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah. And I'm looking forward not just to teaching, but to learn a bit as well through some of the tea and herbal medicine. So it'll be exciting. I hope to see you there.
Yes. Have a beautiful day, everyone. And we'll see you next time. Peace and love.
ideas or topics discussed during this podcast should not be a replacement for any type of medical advice. Although Danielle is a certified trainer and I have a knowledge of herbal medicine, any decision to incorporate an exercise or herbal remedy is always your own.